They said get the chair past his brain drop.
The order. Where's security?
Who the hell?
A very big hotel. The size of these guys.
Who the hell are these goofs in the mask? With the message. Bray with the splash. Cover. Bray and Andrade with the win.
I think I know. Yep. That's who I thought. Greatest center of all time. Jason Kelce and Lane Johnson. Welcome to WrestleMania 40, Philadelphia Eagles.
That was Saturday night. That was the voice of Pat McAfee, who was on the call for WWE, one of the scripted events at WrestleMania. And we all know it's all scripted and planned at this point, but it still can be interesting and exciting and ultimately entertaining. That's what the E now means. Used to be WWF. Now it's WWE.
So it's totally gone, the WWF. That doesn't exist anymore. I didn't really know if I knew that exactly. I thought maybe it was still part of the deal somehow, some way.
What happened was,
right,
WWE lost a real life wrestling match in the legal arena,
okay,
to the World, what is it? What is it now?
Wildlife Federation? Yes, way to go.
Wildlife
Eat Fund. That. Yes, boom. Yes, Captain Planet. Eat
Vince
it.
McMahon's various losses. Was
the panda bear put Vince McMahon in a headlock. See ya.
Actually, yes. It was the first WrestleMania ever, and it was the 40th WrestleMania. It was the first one without Vince McMahon involved in it because he's been removed from the company for.
I'm amazed by it. I'm amazed.
Things that
I really.
I don't want to get into the specifics because I don't know the specifics, right, and I don't want to defame him and get sued by him.
Right.
But there was something that happened, and now he's gone. I don't follow it closely enough to know, but it was stuff that would justify the end result, apparently, or the end result would not have happened. The end result yesterday: Jason Kelce and Lane Johnson. Now that would have been
entertaining. That would have been big time.
Lane Johnson.
Wow.
Lane Johnson and Jason Kelce doing some shenanigans outside the ring to help Rey Mysterio, I think. Was that one of the names? That name's been around wrestling for a long time. Mysterio and the other guy to win some sort of a tag team wrestling thing. And if you watch closely, you'll see that Jason Kelce is the one engaging in the physical activity. Lane Johnson is simply like holding a chair and raising a chair and climbing in very carefully into the ring. Kelce jumps up and over. We've seen that jumping up and over, though, when he jumped up into the box in Buffalo in the divisional round game when he came out shirtless. Lane Johnson didn't do anything for one very specific reason. You can't when you're under contract with an NFL team. You can't. You can't wrestle. And even though it's all fake and scripted and everybody knows the results in advance, it still is a physical activity that can lead to injury, and it's the kind of thing that they don't want football players under contract doing. As your Tennessee Titans learned, and as Pac-Man Jones learned the hard way, this was before you were in Tennessee. This was 07, the year he was suspended for the entire season because of multiple violations of the personal conduct policy. He decided he was going to wrestle on the side. I mean, what the hell? He's suspended. The Titans took him to court, much like the WWF with the WWE. The Titans took him to court and got an injunction preventing him from doing anything physical. He was allowed to be there, but he was just basically a spectator because there's language in the contract preventing. The standard player contract prevents that kind of stuff. That's why you didn't see Lane Johnson hit anybody with that chair. He just kind of grabbed the chair away, held the chair, climbed into the
ring. It was so violent. He might have been hurt. So good thing he didn't. It was so violent. I was so scared for him. Oh my God.
You never know. You never know.
Oh my gosh.
But you can tell. But I guarantee it. But I'm telling you. Don't start with me. Don't start. I don't want to give the sites out there that cover the media, I don't want to give them something to write about today. So don't start. Don't you start. Don't start.
Jeez.
Anyway, that was fun last week. I knew it was going to happen as we were doing it on Thursday, as we were getting into our own wrestling match, which was not fake. It was natural. It was organic. It was real. And then it was over. But you know, people think that, like, we were mad at each other and there's some lingering issue and parallels between Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. And it's like, shit, we forgot about it by the time the show was over.
Yeah, I've already forgot it. Why are you bringing it up again? I mean, get over it. Let's move on with life. Jeez, I mean.
I just don't know.
We're talking WWE
I'm having fun
here. Let's go. Let's move
I'm having on. Fun.
I mean, I'm really, I'm right. still amazed with the WWE. I am. That it has that type of power. I literally, it's one of those things where I go, what? People went there to a stadium to watch that? They're turning on a TV to watch that? I just don't get it. That's one where I just don't understand how we're going to watch a bunch of grown men in costumes go fake wrestle with each other and do stuff and be like, yeah, I know your head didn't hit there when Jason Kelce threw you. In fact, your hand was like this, and then you went like that and fell. But yeah, like I just am amazed by that. It's like it's a psychology experiment in our country. It just what is that? I don't even know what it is.
People watch the NFL, and it's rigged and scripted too. So
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
six
right.
of one, half a dozen of the other.
That's right. Right. Yes.
There was a time when they actually tried to perpetrate the idea that it was real.
I remember.
And when they decided to go ahead and let everybody know, like, oh, what's going to happen? Nobody cares. Everybody knew. At some level, they knew. Viscerally, they knew. I remember when I was a kid and I would watch it on TV. Like, I got a feeling when somebody punches somebody else, they don't stomp on the ground when they do it yeah. to create the sound
right.
of the punch. And there's no follow through.
Yeah.
It's this lame punch that kind of bounces off the guy's head. And my dad used to take me. The WWF used to come to Wheeling, West Virginia, periodically. And he'd take me, and I'd love it. And he would tell me it's fake, and I'd get upset with him.
Jeez.
Not because he was telling me something that I didn't otherwise know. I just didn't want to hear it. I wanted to suspend disbelief. We go to a movie. You go to a movie. Watch them all the time. It's all scripted. It's all made up. The outcome is not just predetermined, it's prepackaged. It's already finished. It's not happening as we're watching
yeah,
it.
It's way better. The
but
punches look
go.
Way more real and everything.
Well, true.
So, yes. And they're true. But they're vested in real stories sometimes. So, I mean, not all of them.
Right.
You know what I mean? But yes.
But the whole point is it's entertainment.
Yes.
That's why the E is so relevant. Even though they had to forcibly give up the F. The E makes a hell of a lot more sense.
Well, the other thing is, we talked about this a lot lately, right? When we were talking about The Rock a few weeks ago, when we were talking about, I mean, did Lane Johnson grow? Is Lane Johnson 7'9 now? I mean, look at him on the stage next to the wrestlers. Jason Kelce is 6'3. He looks like he's 7'4 next to the guys that are wrestlers for the WWE. If we could re-rack that or re-show that when they jump up onto the stage, I mean, look at when they're standing next to each other. It's pretty crazy, actually. And I mean, I know Lane Johnson's huge. He's like 6'7", maybe 6'6", and change. But you see right here, I mean, Jason Kelce's hugging, they're hugging the guy that's on top of the shoulders of the other guy, and they're the same height as him. I mean, pretty incredible.
There have been plenty of NFL players that have been involved in WrestleMania over the years. It is the signature event. It's so big they use Roman numerals for it, just like the Super Bowl. I remember when it started back in 1985, I believe it was the first WrestleMania. And Pete is telling us, don't yuck their yum. I don't know what that means. Pete says it's what teachers say to kids these days. Don't criticize someone for simply liking something you don't
well,
like.
Well, here's another phrase. So. That show is so mid. It's so mid, it's ridiculous. There's that. That phrase, the young phrase. That's, yeah, they got that one. It's mid, that show. All right? Jeez.
It is amazing, though. It is amazing that people will flock to the site of WrestleMania. And it was open air all weekend long in Philadelphia. What if it had rained? What if it had snowed? What if it had been cold?
Wow.
I mean, April 6 and 7 in the Northeast, you're rolling the dice.
It snowed on
you
Friday.
You could get some interesting, but you know what? Those folks still would have been there, and I'm not begrudging them. I'm not criticizing. There is a passionate following for something. I think it's like our love of larger-than-life superheroes, even if they aren't really larger than life, But it just shows you what that spectacle does. It'll take somebody who's 5'7" and make them seem much larger until Lane Johnson and Jason Kelce step into the ring, and then you see what really is larger than life. And maybe that's why we haven't seen Gronk wrestle. They can't. Gronk would blow up the whole spot. Gronk steps in and he's twice the size of the average wrestler. It's like, oh well, we can't do that. Maybe Andre the Giant was just 6'3".
I've seen like Hulk Hogan. He was legit 6'4". I he lived in Tampa, right? So that's what I was just going to say. I was going to go, did we lose the bigger wrestler, a part of that, that last generation there? Andre the Giant certainly was, I don't know how officially tall he was but he was way up there, right? Yeah.
Macho Man wasn't really tall.
No,
Macho
we talked
Man
about
was not
that.
Very tall.
No. Yeah. I met him. He was one of the guys I met as a young kid when I was still in that 7-8 age, and I was in the age of, wait, Dad, I think this is still real. Are you sure? I think I told you I saw him at the airport, and he was 5'7", and it was it hurt my soul a little bit because I had built him up in my eyes so much bigger in my brain through the years.
Andre the Giant reportedly was 7'4", and there's a picture somewhere of him holding a beer can, and it's like he's holding a thimble.
Right,
it really is.
Yeah.
So he was a true and literal giant.
Yes.
But a lot of these guys might not be as big. Why didn't you want to talk about our fight from last week? Why'd you gloss over that?
I don't know. Because I wanted to keep talking about the WWE. I don't know. Right. I just was just talking about the WWE.
Well, but there's parallels. But our fighting was real.
Yes.
Our fighting was real. It wasn't physical, but it was real. But it was quick. It was organic. It was natural. And it was gone. And the folks out there who... And I get it. If you're in the media, you want to take something and make it into a bigger deal. We kind of do that from time to time. But there are moments where you can, like, reach out to somebody and get a little context, get a little explanation, get a few more paragraphs for your story that you're writing. And I've for some of these folks out there who cover the media, and I know them, I say, hey, if you ever need anything, let me know. And then they
don't need
whatever
you.
Spin on it they want. They don't reach out. They don't know because they don't want the truth to get in the way of what might be a far juicier story. But hey, to the extent that it has introduced a few more folks to the existence of the show that happens to be on at 7 a.m. Eastern when there's another NFL show that isn't going to be on until God knows when, welcome in. We'll take care of you for the next couple of hours, and we aren't taking a five-month hiatus. We may take we will take a summer hiatus. It's a normal, regular hiatus that may be extended this year by the Olympics, but we're not going to shut down, especially not 1 month before the draft. How was your weekend?
It was very good. Very good. Back into Little League Baseball, right? That's going on. We finally, it was like literally, we actually had sun this weekend in the Northeast, which is rare. It's very rare that we actually had a weekend without rain, but it was great. Good sports. Friday night, watching the Women's Final Four. Check that out. That was cool. The Iowa game versus UConn. The suspect call at the end. Saturday night, the Final Four. Watched that, enjoyed that. Watched the Iowa game again yesterday against the great South Carolina basketball team. Congrats to them. Good weekend. Daddy daycare kind of stuff, but definitely a good one.
That basketball game yesterday was amazing because Iowa was up 10-0. 10-0. And then it was the slow, methodical, inevitable, the depth of the bench. When you have 9 players
that you
can interchange, it's just like we talk about with the pass rush. If you have 7 or 8 players that you can consistently move in and out going against the same 5 all the time, I mean, there are parallels there. Those 5 are going to wear down.
Yeah.
And those 9 are going to be fresh.
Right.
And they're going to just gradually overpower you. And Camila Cardoso, 6'9". I mean, the lane is shut down for business. When you take that away, when you take that element away for Iowa, you've got no chance. The greatest player in basketball can't overcome the greatest team, period.
That's right.
And you kind of, after, like, they don't want to say it because you don't want to disrespect the rest of the players on Iowa, but the only reason they were there was because
of one person.
You take her out of the mix and they got no chance.
No, they're a five seed probably in the tournament. Yeah. I mean, realistically, yes, agreed. Right. You're saying it, right?
The rest is it's a team. It's a team that didn't lose a game the entire year.
Right.
And I know there was this groundswell that Caitlin Clark in some way deserved it and, you know, everything she did for college basketball. You can make that argument, but her team wasn't good enough to win, plain and simple. They had a 10-0 lead, and they lost by more than 10 points. They lost by 15, right. I think it was, at the end of the day. So, anyway, I didn't watch it intently. I was down in my barn.
Yeah, I was kind of in and out yesterday.
Kind of like on and off, in and out. But you knew there, you know there are moments when you need to pay attention and wait for a replay, and there are moments where it's just kind of, as my dad always told me, if you watch anything more than the last 5 minutes of a basketball game, you're wasting your time. So by the last 5 minutes, it was pretty much – It was pretty much decided. It was by the last. There was still a little bit, but it wasn't much. We went out of town for part of the weekend, which is something I rarely do in the off season. I like to be home. I don't like to leave.
You like to be home? I didn't know that. Damn that. Hey guys, Mike likes to be home. Guys, just so you know, write that down.
It was my little nephew's birthday. He's two now.
Awesome.
So we went to Columbus.
Okay.
Saturday for his party. Spent the night in Columbus.
Cool.
And in they call it the Short North, which is kind of a nice area with hotels and restaurants and shops.
Right.
And, the DC United were staying in our hotel. They were playing the Columbus Crew. We drove past their stadium on Saturday. They're very popular. They won the championship last year. I didn't know that. But it looks like a nice, intimate venue for a sporting event where it's not a ton of people that can get in, but it looks like it looks like an exciting place to watch a soccer match. So that was going on in Columbus. We had a cool. nice time, had a little cake, visited with the family, got home yesterday. Yesterday was great. Yesterday was sunny, dry roads, good conditions, not a lot of traffic. Very conducive.
Oh, you hit it a little, huh?
Driving my
Woo-hoo.
Car. No. The problem was I had my wife with me who was constantly monitoring the speedometer and reminding me to keep it in check. So I would wait for her to get distracted by her phone and then but I was responsible. I was responsible at all times.
All right,
it
good
was a
job.
Nice day to drive.
Good job.
It was a nice day
it
to
was
take
a nice
little
day to drive.
Batmobile for a
very nice
hour drive.
Very nice.
Two and a half
yeah.
hour drive.
We get that where I live. I mean, I know you've been to my house, right? But it's those backcountry roads, and on a Sunday, like a day like yesterday, it was really nice. And I always kind of chuckle about this with my wife because, you know, when I want to speed around town, the cops are always around. And then on Sunday, right? There's like, I don't know if it's car clubs or what, but like I wake up yesterday morning, my son's got a baseball game. It's 8:30 and, you know, making some coffee or whatever. And you'll see like 10 Ferraris in a row go by, right? A pack of Ferraris all fly by. It's cool. It really is. And then a few minutes later, you'll see, whoa, here goes 8 or 10 Porsches and they're all different colors. And it is cool. Right, but I always chuckle. I'm like, where's the police that is always down the street when I'm riding down the street and putting the pedal to the metal? And here on Sunday, I mean, they must know, right? That's what I asked my wife. They must know, have a deal. Hey, cops, we're going to be going this way today. I don't know how that works. I always figure it's like some rich person who donates a lot of money to the Greenwich Police or something.
I was just going to say.
And, right? And it's like, don't be on this road
has been made
at 8 o'clock
to
on
the
Sundays.
Ball.
Yeah, right. Something yeah. there. Right.
Yeah.
All right.
I didn't see a cop the whole way.
Wow.
The whole way.
Wow.
Back or forth the whole way. You worry about it, though. I mean, that's the last
yeah,
thing
of course.
I need to get, you know, especially if I'm grossly exceeding. Like, there are limits of speeding where they take your license and cut it in half and you're just done. But I could not get away with that, which is good. My wife is a built-in restrictor plate on how fast the Audi can go. One last thing before we
we got to talk about football here at some point.
No, we will. It's slow right now. It's slow. This is a perfect day to talk about other shit. We got to show the picture of Andre the Giant holding the beer can just to confirm that he is indeed
That is amazing.
There he is. And he was also excellent in The Princess Bride, great movie from the late 80s.
That's like an old school beer can, though. I don't think that's like the same beer can now.
Still a 12-ouncer. Still a 12-ouncer.
You think so? I don't know. Even the guy's can on the other hand looks smaller-ish. It might be. I don't know if I'm buying that. Hand. I don't know. I mean, his hands are gigantic. I know that. That's for sure. Did you notice that Lane Johnson had that big Dom T-shirt on, too? Did you see that?
Oh, I thought you said it was time to talk football. Yeah, number one fan of PFT, my good friend. My good friend.
Yeah, suck it, Florio. Yeah, Big Dom. Yeah.
Love what it. A shock he'd end up in the middle of that, insinuating himself in everything. What a shock. All right, let's move on to football. By the way, the Eagles gave Jordan Mailata a 3-year contract extension, reportedly worth $66 million and $48 million guaranteed, keeping that great offensive line together, but for the fact that Jason Kelce has retired. But that continues to be one of the tremendous strengths of one of the best teams National Football League, which hopefully can turn around the slide that started last year when Dom DeSandro decided to lay hands on Dre Greenlaw and got banned from the sideline for the rest of the season. And there were some who suggested that his absence prevented Nick Sirianni from doing his job the right way or whatever the story was. But he'll be back next year. The Eagles will be back, and they'll have a chance to right the ship with Jordan Mailata under contract for several years to come.
Hey, Mailata, I mean, that's what you love about the Eagles. I mean, they're forward-thinking. They get out in front of things, right, a little quicker than it seems like with most teams. Even the Landon Dickerson at guard a few weeks ago, right, paying him, hey, he's good, we know it. Let's get out in front now and give him a top-of-the-market type deal so he doesn't become all pro next year, and then we have to make him the highest-paid guy when he's a free agent. You know, and the same thing with Mailata. Mailata is that conversation. Mailata was my first-team all-pro left tackle this year. He's a special human being. You know, there's just not a lot of guys on earth that are 6'8", 340-something, can move the way he can move, run blocks, right? They're protecting the strength of their football team. That's one of the things that when you play the Eagles, the first thing you worry about is, like, wait, we know they got good skill guys, but, like, the hell with all that, we're going to get bludgeoned and blown off the ball. We're going to have to do something to stop their offensive line and them overpowering you. So even with the loss of Jason Kelce, again, the forward thinking, the guys they've drafted the last 2 years, Cam Jurgens, Landon Dickerson, right? They drafted the other guard out of Tyler Steen last year at Alabama. So they're going to be just as good this year. That's what's amazing. And, yeah, great deal for him and, you know, great deal for the Eagles.
And it underscores the importance of the offensive line. There was a moment 2 weeks ago at the league meetings where Jim Harbaugh was talking about the importance of the offensive line. And I swear, some people acted like he was Moses coming down from Mount Sinai with the stone tablets. I mean, it was a very basic, obvious thing that we talk about all the time, right? How important it is. Your team cannot function if you don't have competent offensive linemen. But because, you know, it's Jim Harbaugh and he's saying it in the Jim Harbaugh way. Locked, cocked, and ready to rock, by the way. That was something he said last week.
Wow.
Miles and I talked about that.
Wow, I hadn't heard that one.
That's a new saying for the Jim Harbaugh doll with the pull string. Locked, cocked, and ready to rock. So, yes. But offensive line, very important, as we have known. Anybody who has paid any attention to football at any point in their lives knows offensive line is critical, but they get overlooked when a team is doing well because nobody wants to talk about what the offensive line is doing. They want to talk about the quarterback's doing, what the receivers are doing, what the tight end's doing, what the running back's doing. They can't do any of it without the offensive line.
And you know, honestly, Mike, I think we're going to age right now. We're going to see it in the draft where I'm not so sure it's not as important as it's ever been, right? We talk about it all season long. The defensive lines are deeper and more talented than the NFL offensive linemen right now. There's not enough good offensive linemen to go around. We see it. I mean, one guy gets hurt in a lot of teams, and we're like, oh, no, they're going to fall apart on the offensive line, right? It's an issue. The way college football is being coached and taught and all of that, there's very few that are ready to go and can match kind of the freakiness of what we got as far as defensive linemen in the NFL right now. So when you got some, you gotta take advantage of it. And I think that's where we're going to see a lot of them go in the draft because people are going to go, wait, this is a good group. This is a group that's like top notch. You know, you can't pass these guys up. This is high quality. And to your point, Mike, with the O-line and all that stuff, look at where we are right now. Right? I mean, I think the days of like some team trying to figure it out with an average offensive line is it's over in the NFL. Kansas City, the investments they make in the O-line. We know the 49ers, one of the best. Oh, the other two teams in the championship game. What? The Lions, gigantic people throughout, right? I mean, we were on the field with them twice this year. We were like, yeah, they could eat us for breakfast. No problem. All right? I mean, again, the Ravens, same type of thing. So, you know, there's something to be said about that right now. And I think there's got to be added interest and added investment by teams. When you got a good one or good ones, you got to keep them for all the reasons you're talking about.
And that is the one area that kind of blows up the fascination with the draft, because
it does, yeah.
I think it's the intersection of the draft and fantasy football.
Yeah.
Where.
Yeah.
Linemen. We don't care. We don't care about linemen.
Right.
No. Take a guy that's going to get whatever number of points in this and all that, all the stuff that isn't football. The lineman is football, offensive and defensive, but they're not sexy enough, and we don't get excited, and we get disappointed. We feel deflated when they draft some guy from Arkansas that nobody's ever heard of before who's going to come in and anchor the offensive line for the next 10 years. That's not exciting, because that person doesn't figure into fantasy football. It doesn't figure into any of our prop bets. So we don't care. We don't want to hear it. Please pick the next guy that we'll get all excited about, because that person can become, you know, the dice on the table at Vegas, the vehicle for our wagering. And it's only going to get worse. People are only going to get saltier when offensive linemen are drafted in round one.
Yeah, well, they better get their salt out, because, or I don't know what counterbalances salt. I don't know, you know, what do they
pepper?
Yeah, I guess so. They better get their pepper out, because they better get ready. Like, this draft, from what I'm seeing,
sugar.
I'm not done with all of it yet, but
cocaine?
Offensive linemen and D tackles, there's going to be a lot of them in the first round. They're going to see a lot of big people in this one. It's not going to be about that, but yeah. You know, I think you look at the top three teams in each conference, the Cowboys, add them, right? The Buffalo Bills, offensive line play is essential. It is. It's not only about protecting your quarterback to let these awesome receivers we got in the league right now work downfield. It's to block, you know, all these great defensive linemen we got right now. And the Eagles have certainly figured that out and have the formula. But I think it's maybe more apparent now than ever. I feel like a few years ago, 5-6 years ago, you might have been able to make a run in the playoffs with like, we're a kind of in-between offensive line type of football team. I feel like now we're in an era right now where it's just so many good defensive linemen. You can't get away with that anymore. I think you're seeing like the Rams. The Rams are probably the last team to go to the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl, where you went, that O-line, that was just okay, right? You know, but I think they even realized, whoa, we can't live like that anymore, and they've changed. And I think it's going to be a thing of the future here for sure, Mike.
I just feel like the dopamine rush football fans who, you know, want the sexy names now. They'd rather teams address their offensive line needs in free agency.
Yeah, or
the
later
draft
rounds.
Is for,
right.
The draft is for going out there and picking the names that we find exciting,
yeah.
That we need to, you know, that,
right.
that are going to be
I've
the
been
foundations
watching him on
of
college
our,
football. Now he's on our team.
Unrelated to the actual winning of a game activities for the next, you know, 7, 8, 9 years. All right. You mentioned salt too. It is like the foundation of every Italian superstition. Every time I think of salt, I think of my dad and the way he was about salt. First day of school, first grade, a little pocket on my doofy little shirt, filling it up with salt. First car, bag of salt. I said, Dad, I'm going to get pulled over. They're going to think I have cocaine in the car. So salt, it's all about salt. I don't know what the hell it is about salt.
Yeah.
But salt is sacred.
Hey,
like, why do we even eat it? If you can't spill it, you have to like, oh, it's.
Well, if well, it's
why,
on you,
why
it's
why
lucky. Think about what it does when it's inside of you. It's even better. Look at that.
Yeah. More salt.
Yeah.
More salt.
I'm all for it. I'm a salt guy.
Speaking of guys who can be a little salty at times, Stephon Diggs, the guy whose departure from Buffalo sparked our three rounds, not quite three rounds. It was more like one round. It was half a round last week, but it was pretty intense while it lasted. Stephon Diggs now working out with his new teammates in Houston. And, you know, Chris, I think we talked about this last week. This is one of the reasons why the Texans wanted to do it when they wanted to do it. It would have been better for the Bills to wait until after the draft so they could be a little low-key and get a receiver without everybody knowing they're getting receiver. We talked about the blinking red light. Everybody knows they're going to be looking at receivers. If they just could have held Diggs for three more weeks, they could have pulled it off. The Texans want what's playing out. The Texans want Diggs there. The Texans want him at offseason workouts. He's working out already before the workouts even begin with C.J. Stroud, Tank Dell, John Metchie. This is a guy who in recent years has been kind of aloof and absent. Now there he is with his helmet on. With the helmet on, ready to go. First look at Stephon Diggs in a non-Photoshop Texans helmet, catching balls from the jugs machine, getting ready to go, getting ready to join the offseason workouts, and off he goes.
Yeah, cool to see. We know Stephon Diggs works. He's into his craft. That's undeniable as far as being, you know, all over these type of drills, catching hand-eyes type of stuff, the route running. You know, there's a reason he's one of the better route runners in all of football. Let's see, he works on it. I mean, all the time. There's no doubt. And he's with a crew that, you know, it seems by all due accounts is a bunch of football junkies too. C.J. Stroud seems like a junkie, right? You know, Tank Dell, C.J. Stroud's guy, seems like he's kind of a junkie as well. So that's a good combination they got working there. They like we talked about, they got a lot of potential on that offense. And let's see what they can do with it and come together and how quickly they can do it all. And, you know, what's the new wrinkles they add to the offense this year to stay ahead of the curve? And because they are going to have teams in their division, as we know, they're going to be studying them, all that. I'm excited. How could you not be about what the Houston Texans got to offer on offense?
By the way, I've learned from being around my son the past several years.
Yeah.
C.J. Stroud had some nice Jordans on. If we put that back up, there were some nice Jordans. I don't know which ones they were.
Well,
my son would be able to look at those and know instantly which Jordans they were. But I am trained to spot the Jordans.
I was starting to wonder, because I saw a video too, and maybe I'm wrong that it wasn't this weekend, where it looked like he was on a field that there was a Jordan emblem on the field. Maybe it was an old Instagram video, and maybe I'm just an old man that's being fooled by it. But yeah, he's got a little swag. You know, he's wearing the Jordan T-shirt too. I'm starting to think that maybe something was done there.
He's getting a little Jordan money.
Right,
getting a little
right.
Jordan money.
I think he might be. I definitely
smart.
Right,
it smart to invest in C.J. Stroud. He's on the way up. By the way, they also worked out with a Twitch celebrity named Sketch.
That's who I think
and
I saw the video of. That's what I'm talking about.
I freely admit.
There's the Jordan logo. See it? You'll see it. Watch.
Yeah.
It's on the right.
Who the hell is Sketch? Is that Sketch? That's Sketch. Sketch is he's clearly not an athlete. Sketch.
So. Yeah, he's a video gamer that's
he's
got
a video
online
game.
Following, right? I mean, that's what the world's about now, Mike. I mean, didn't don't you know? It's you're a gamer and you have a social media following.
C.J. Stroud's running routes too. I wouldn't be.
Call the Texans. Tell them to sign a waiver.
Keep him healthy at all costs. Keep C.J. Stroud healthy at all costs. Oh, now he's.
See, where are they, though? See the Jordan emblem on the field there?
Oh, my God.
See that?
Oh, my God. Sketch, yeah. Sketch is sketchy. Did you see Sketch try to catch that pass? There is the Jordan emblem. Jumpman. C.J. Stroud's getting some Jordan money, and he deserves it. I see Go Bruins there, so it must be UCLA. Could it be UCLA?
I guess. I don't know. It doesn't look like their colors, but maybe it is. Maybe that's where they are. They're out in
I
L.A.
I saw the blue
on
the side. I see Go Bruins on the side.
Okay, so. You're right. There's UCLA in the end zone. I see it. You're right. Way to go. Way to go, Inspector.
Okay. A little more on the aftermath of Diggs and Josh Allen and – you know, our and this I tread lightly because our whole thing was sparked by my belief that there should have been times when Josh Allen took charge of the relationship. And apparently something did happen that we didn't know about at the time. Tim Graham, who has covered the Bills forever, has a podcast named Tim Graham and Friends. Here is Graham from that podcast talking about the scene in the Bills locker room after they lost that Monday night game to the Jets, where the Jets lost Aaron Rodgers on the fourth snap. It was Zach Wilson. It looked like the Bills would win easily. The Bills
punt return
in overtime. Right. Multiple turnovers from Allen. Here's Graham on the scene in the locker room after that 22-16 loss.
And Josh Allen was sitting there in full uniform with Kyle Allen trying to console him. And a stream of players coming up, patting him on the back, dapping him up. You know, they were trying to pick the guy up. He had a towel draped over his head, and he just sat there. One thing I didn't include in the story was Stephon Diggs coming up to him after the game. And I Didn't include it, I think, because I didn't include it because I didn't know what Stephon Diggs said to him. But Josh Allen snapped at him. And he said, it's one game. And kind of motioned like, I'm not talking to you here. And Diggs walked away, and John and Josh was sat there. Maybe Stephon Diggs was saying something nice to him, and he was just, but he didn't snap at anybody else. A stream of players were coming over, you know, popping him on the shoulder pads, I think, or back patting him on the back, or, you know, whatever. Like I said, dapping him up. Hey, man, we'll get him next week. And whatever Stephon Diggs said to him, Josh Allen wasn't having it.
Okay. I understand Tim Graham's explanation as stated for why he didn't include that in his story after week one. I reject it, frankly. And it's not a criticism of him. It's a reality of being someone who covers a team. That's the kind of thing that if you write that week one, the rest of your season is not going to be easy. Because the rest of your season, you're relying upon access from the team. The team is going to be pissed off that you put that out there and started something that they don't need. We're coming off of this loss. We don't need you shining a light on the fact that Josh Allen said to Stephon Diggs, snapped at Stephon Diggs, it's one effing game. I don't care if you didn't hear what Stephon Diggs said. You heard what Josh Allen said. How's that not newsworthy? How does that get buried? Here's how it gets buried. If you're going to cover a team, and I'm not saying it's right, I'm just saying it is. If you're going to cover a team and you need access to that team, you are not going to gratuitously or unnecessary you're going to exercise discretion.
Sure.
At times.
Yeah.
Because you don't want your life to be harder because you're the asshole who stirred up Stephon Diggs getting snapped at by Josh Allen, and that consumed the balance of a short week going into a week two game that they had to win after losing on Monday night. That's the explanation that he's not going to give.
Well, yeah,
but I'll give it for him
because
it would apply to any beat writer in that circumstance. Because why wouldn't you report that? Why wouldn't you report that if you witnessed it?
Yeah, listen, it's you know, survival. It's CYA, whatever, however you want to describe it. We've all been there. We've all done it. We've all been a part of it. It's a tough one. Yeah, oh, yeah, you're going to release something that, you know, is going to be a crap storm, and it's about the two most famous people on the football team. And, yeah, your life is dependent on the access to that football team. And, of course, talking to those two guys and having a relationship with them gets you the most reads, clicks, whatever. So, yeah, you're right. He made it a business decision. I have a hard time thinking he's the only guy in the locker room that heard Josh Allen probably snap at Stephon Diggs. There's probably other beat reporters that didn't report it either, right? I would think. You know, usually it's not just one guy by himself hanging around the locker room in that instance, right? But, again, you know, it goes back, and I'm not trying to start the – I want to take the alley-oop from Tim and get on you and go, boom, dunked on you. See, he did yell at him, right, and have fun. But I'm not shocked to hear that – listen, I'm sure it's not the only time he snapped at Stephon Diggs or Stephon Diggs snapped at him. With those two personalities and who they are and how intense they are about the sport, I wasn't shocked to hear that once that came out this weekend, or Friday it was, I think.
And there really aren't many things that Stephon Diggs could have said to prompt that response. It's not some great mystery, right? I doubt that it was some unreasonable reaction from Josh Allen to something innocuous. This stream of well-wishers is coming over to make Josh Allen feel better,
right,
as he's depressed in his locker. I don't think Stephon Diggs just said the same thing everybody else was saying, and he picked Stephon Diggs to blow a gasket.
Definitely
on.
Not.
Diggs,
right.
Diggs had to have said something. See what I'm talking about? This is exactly what I'm talking about, right? Something along those lines. Like this Dorsey guy or whatever. Whatever it is that was up his butt about the way the team is failing to get to where it needs to be manifests itself in a week one loss to the Jets, a game they should have won easily once Aaron Rodgers gets injured. Diggs made some snarky comment. Diggs made some observation that reinforced whatever he believed about the organization, and that's what prompted Josh Allen to respond. I think common sense allows us to come to that conclusion. And here's why it comes out now. See, and again, I don't want to get crossways with Tim Graham. I've known him for a long time, haven't talked to him in a while, but it comes out now because it fits the agenda the Bills are trying to sell Stephon Diggs bad. Like, what Stephon Diggs did something to get Josh Allen to yell at him. This is a moment where they're trying to get Bills fans who are distraught about the departure of Stephon Diggs. They're not happy. They don't understand it. Why did we do this? Why are we doing this? This is part of getting everybody on board. Stephon Diggs was causing trouble.
Yeah.
While he's here causing trouble, we don't want to shine a light on it. Right. Now that he's gone, we want everybody to know he was a troublemaker.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're probably right about that assessment. We don't know. Josh Allen's not been one to snap at anybody or be that kind of guy with other people. You know, Josh Allen, we know, is extremely, extremely hard on himself. Right. I mean, remember the press conference after that game? He was sitting there in the shoulder pads. He was mad. Same. I think he said same shit, different, you know, year, something like that. Sorry, London. Right.
Maybe that's what Diggs had said to him. Maybe he got mad at Diggs and then stole his line.
Well,
press conference.
Thinking he was literally saying same bleep, different year. He was talking about him. That did cross my mind when I heard this. This like here we are again. You know, tough loss. I ended last year. This guy was in my face and in my ear talking about the Bengals loss. And now here we are, you know, this year or me, you know, and he's giving it to me again. I don't know. But obviously there was frustration there. And I think it goes back to how we started this conversation, Mike. You talked about Houston. They wanted Diggs there to get this started and get it going. And on the other side of that coin was Buffalo going, wait, we're about to start our offseason program, and we don't want you here, and we don't want our players answering questions. And that's why the deal wasn't great for Buffalo. I think the Houston Texans knew that. They took advantage of it. They obviously know Diggs wanted him out. Buffalo wanted Diggs out. It was over. And therefore, that's why it looks like they fleeced him with this whole deal in general. And I just, you know, as we're talking about it, we know there was a lot of other things at play here.
I still think it would have been better for the Bills to wait until after the draft. They could have finessed their way through the first couple of weeks of the offseason program because it's not – there's not a lot going on. It's
right.
Weightlifting, it's right. Running, it's cardio, it's meetings. Get through 2 weeks, unload Diggs after you draft a receiver or two or three without teams realizing, hey, the Bills are all over receivers in this draft. And Diggs can't be upset about his targets or his catches in week one. He had 13 targets for 10 catches, 102 yards, one of his few 100-yard games, although he had 5 in the first 6 and none after that. 102 receiving yards and a touchdown in that loss to the Jets. So who knows what it was, but it surely was something consistent with things Diggs has said in the past to get Josh Allen to react that way. And I'm glad to know he reacted that way. I like knowing that. I like knowing that the quarterback was trying to take charge of the relationship, and maybe that's one of the reasons why they finally gave up on it. We want the quarterback to be the leader of the team. We don't want anyone to get in the way of Josh Allen leading the team, and Stephon Diggs was in the way of that happening.
I think so. I mean, it, at least from their side of the story, right? That seems to be the perceived notion there. You know, and I feel like just knowing from people around the league that Buffalo feels like they did everything to try to make sure this relationship worked, did well, whatever. Now, I'm sure Stephon Diggs won't totally agree with that. And like we talked about last week with the last year's OTAs and him leaving the building, I'm sure Buffalo's at fault to a degree as well with some of the things they said.
Yeah, they told him to leave.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's that you're exactly right. I mean, that's not a delicate phrase for sure. But either way, I think both sides we know were sick of each other. And that led to Buffalo getting him out of there in a hurry and for less than he's worth, that's for sure.
See, this is the kind of thing where when something like that happens and we apply our experience and common sense and try to project what this means for the relationship, there'll be some people out there who will say, oh, that's fan fiction. No, it's an effort to assess the situation and figure out what the end game is. When you have a mandatory minicamp and Stephon Diggs is there and then he's gone and the head coach makes it look like he stormed out unauthorized and nobody knows where he is and they're worried about him, and we spend 24 hours under that cloud trying to figure out,
right,
is Stephon Diggs okay?
Right.
What's going on here? And then they admit they told him to leave. That's the kind of thing that breaks the camel's back.
Definitely.
And it's kind of amazing they found a way to hold it together for one season and not move on. In hindsight, you know what, Chris? In hindsight, they would have gotten more. Look at his numbers from last year. No, wait. Do it week 6. Sell high. I mean, he didn't do much after week 6. He had no 100-yard games after week 6. His high after that was 86 yards, and that was more aberration. 34 yards, 27 yards, 24 yards, 29 yards. He had 21 in the playoff game. If you really want to sell high, you trade him at the deadline. You trade him at the deadline. And maybe they wish after the fact that that's what they had done.
Well, I mean, in hindsight, yes. But I think we got to go back to the time. And at that time, what were we doing? Whoa, wobbly Jenga tower, Buffalo. Whoa, right? Yeah. So they're going, wait, we're trying to survive here. We're trying to win. We're trying to, you know, not get knocked out of the playoffs. So, and you know, to their credit, for good job by them holding it together. You know, because, like, you know, we got dragged a little last year because after that went on, we kind of went, it kind of seems like the writing's on the wall that this might be the last year for Stephon Diggs in Buffalo. And people thought that was a crazy thing to think. And here we are, and look what happened, right? But, yeah, I mean, they obviously did a good job of trying to put their best foot forward, both of them, Diggs, the organization, to make the season work. But, yes, once I think teams got a good feel for how Buffalo was playing, how they were attacking, and this was part of, I think, the reason Dorsey did get fired. You know, there just wasn't enough there, enough other answers, anything there, right? I think teams caught on to that. And then I think it feels like Joe Brady kind of took the, right, I'm not going to just run this whole Ken Dorsey thing and make it about Diggs. We're going to start throwing to everybody. I'm going to have some plays where Shakir's the number one read and Knox is the number one read. And it's not going to be all about Diggs being the number one read. And we're going to make James Cook part of the passing offense. And they kind of started to evolve from there. And I would bet somewhere down the end of the season is where they started to get the confidence of, we don't need Diggs anymore. Look, he only had 34 yards. We're on a winning streak. We're playing well. The ball's being dispersed to everybody, right?
And they're not doubling him.
Exactly. Right. So I think that probably gave them the confidence to do this.
The rest of the offense isn't opening up because they're devoting extra resources to Stephon Diggs, which allows other guys to run free or beat single coverage. He's not contributing the way they used to. They're not doubling him the way they used to. This is the time to move on. And I think that Bills fans are twisted up about it for reasons similar to what we talked about earlier with the draft. I mean, the guys who produce yards, touchdowns, fantasy points, get
headlines,
you over under on prop bets, right? Those are the guys that some fans become overly enamored with.
Yeah.
And when that guy's gone now, they freak out. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? You know what you're going to do? You're going to find somebody else. Look what the Chiefs did. They moved on from Tyreek Hill. Not that they have solved that problem, but they've won every Super Bowl that's been played since they moved on from Tyreek Hill. So it's about the team. What's in the best interest of the team? And sometimes there can be that one guy that is just enough of a pain in the ass that upsets the apple cart and hurts the vibe and requires action to be taken to extricate that person from the situation so that everybody else can thrive. That's the key. And that's what they're doing. That's what the Chiefs did with Tyreek Hill. That's what the Bills did with Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're cooking, like, let's make it more the committee approach, right? Let's make sure our leader is our leader and we don't have somebody infringing on that. We know who that is, Josh Allen. And you know, by all due accounts, and I'm not saying they're right or anything like that, they feel like he was a distraction to their football team too. So I think they're looking at it like, hey, you know, we're moving on, and we think we can be better, you know, without him. Now we'll see, because we know the microscope, whatever, the bullseye, it's all on them, just like it was with the Chiefs and Mahomes when Tyreek Hill left. I mean, like, think about how many people. Like, it's laughable when you think about how many people went, well, Mahomes won't be the same this year now without Tyreek Hill. I mean, really. Like, come on. Laughable. And you're kind of hearing that already with the Josh Allen and the Bills, and we'll see where it goes. But they obviously need some help there. Like you said, they got a draft. They probably need to make a move in free agency. They need to do something to bolster that room a little bit more than what they got right now.
I'd like to think anybody who would be inclined to say that about Josh Allen learned a lesson from Patrick Mahomes, and also, all due respect to Stephon Diggs, Tyreek Hill is on a higher level and always has been on a higher level.
Of course, right.
Than Stephon Diggs or any other receiver in the NFL, for that matter. It's not a slight at Stephon Diggs.
Yes.
It was a bigger deal for the Chiefs to move on from Tyreek Hill than it will be for the Bills to move on from Diggs, especially with his reduced production post week six. Pete is pointing out that at the end of the regular season, reporters were wondering why Diggs' playing time was down. He was getting fewer snaps than Khalil Shakir and Trent Sherfield in some games. Josh Norman, who joined the Bills late. Remember Josh Norman, star corner for the Panthers in 2015 when they made it to the Super Bowl, then got franchise tag removed, signed with the Commanders, was a starter for a while, and now he's just kind of – and I respect the fact that he's taking whatever job he can, wherever he can get it. Said Norman of Diggs, he's getting playing time, he's just taking himself out. So it's not that he's not getting playing time, he chooses to do that. Another little thing that comes to light – must have come to light at the time.
It did. We kind of talked about it at the time a little bit. We didn't shed a lot of light on it.
That he was doing it himself?
Right.
That he's tapping out himself?
Right.
I don't remember that.
Oh, you don't? I do remember this.
Pete, what's the date of this tweet?
It's January. Early. It's regular. Okay. End of the regular season. Yeah. I remember a little bit. We referred to it just a little. We didn't, like, make a segment on it, but I don't know if we actually talked about it on the show or maybe we talked about it off air. Norman, as we know, is, like you just explained, a footballer, right? He doesn't care. Wait, I'm 39. A team still wants me. Who cares? I'll go play football. That's what I do. And he's extremely real. Josh Norman is not one to BS. I've known him since he came out of college. He worked out at the place I worked out in Jersey. It was one of the first things I ever realized about the guy. I'm like, whoa, whatever's on this guy's mind, he will say. And that's for sure. And I think there's a little, inkling there into another why Buffalo is washing their hands of the situation and wants to move on.
By the way, he's not 39, he's 36.
I know, I was joking.
So he's still...
I was trying to make him older.
But not by much. 59 would have been more of an effective joke. 39, it made me think, is he 39? Has he been around that long? And I thought he'd be like 33. He is 36, but he keeps going wherever he gets the opportunity, and I do respect that. Guy's made a ton of money, probably doesn't need that extra game check here or there, but loves the sport. It's the Joe Flacco dynamic. Hanging around and continuing to play just because he loves to play. And he's going to play, like your dad said once upon a time, play until they rip the pads off of you. Because once it's done, it's done.
Yeah.
That's it. We're done with segment one. When we return, a very large draft prospect made a very large mistake this weekend. We'll tell you who and what and where and how when PFT Live continues right after this.